And I wanted to welcome everyone to the Thursday, July 16th, 2020 Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting. And so I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. And I just want to remind everyone who has joined us that when they're not speaking, to please mute your phone so we don't get feedback. And then if you could just introduce who you are before you speak, since there might be people on the line who don't know the voices. And so we can go ahead and get a roll call, please, Jill.
All right. Member Talley?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
Member Gehring?
Here.
Member Hageman?
Here.
Member Barnidge?
Here.
Member Bright?
Here.
And Member Gibson?
Here.
We have a quorum and every member is present.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining tonight. We will move on to item number 2, which is public comment. Is there anyone on the line in the public who would like to address the committee on items that are not on the agenda? Okay, and I don't know, Jill, at the city council meeting, we always ask if there's written public comment or email. Do we have anything that's come in on email?
Let me check the chat, and at this point, I see none.
Okay, thank you for that. Moving on to item number 3, it's pretty exciting, sad and exciting. We're recognizing Jim Gehring's 39 years of service to the Zone 3 Lopez Water Project, and actually just recognizing him being the water expert here on Zone 3, and he answers all those questions that we don't have the answers to. So I'm really sad to see him go, and I hope we can get in touch with him and still be able to ask him questions. But I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Jill, right?
Yes. Chairperson Barnidge and members of the committee, on behalf of County Public Works Department, I'd like to say a few words recognizing the extensive contributions that Jim Gehring has made to the water resource needs of the 5 cities region and Zone 3 specifically. And I also want to express my own appreciation for the help he has provided on numerous issues. His extensive knowledge of Zone 3 is unmatched, and I would have suffered greatly without his expertise in so many things. And because of his participation at both this level, the advisory level, and on the technical level, he's really helped me so many times on issues through, because he is involved in the various levels of review. We do have an award for Jim, and I'm going to show it right here. You all can see me on the screen, correct?
No. Okay. Karen, right here. No, I wasn't able to.
Too bad.
Unfortunately.
Well, I'll send a picture out, but let me get this. Jim, this is for you. I'll see if I can get this. Right there. Get it. I'm close. Did you get that, Jim? Okay. So it's a very cool water droplet crystal, and it's engraved with your name and the years of experience that you've had here on Zone 3. And I'll read it to you. It says, with our greatest appreciation, Jim Gehring, in recognition of your 39 years of distinguished leadership and unselfish service given to the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District's Zone 3 Water Project.
Well, thank you. That's more than I actually expected or deserved.
Well, I will make sure that you get this, and it specifically recognizes your years of service since 1980, but the truth is, I believe your work even predated that. I've been told by sources that Jim was one of the original survey teams associated with the original construction of Lopez Dam, which was completed over 50 years ago. Kind of makes me wonder if Jim was born for Lopez, and considering that no one has spanned the history and provided the same level of expertise as Jim, Lopez and all of us are better because of Jim. on behalf of the San Luis Obispo Department of Public Works, thank you. Thank you so much, Jim. And we really wish you well in your new life in Arizona. And may all your days include fond memories of Lopez and all the people you've worked with over the years.
Oh, yes, it will. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank all of you.
Thank you, Jim. I just want to say that I know from the Arroyo Grande point of view, Public Works Director and Shane Taylor, I always talk to them about different water issues, and we always say, well, what does Jim think? Well, what did Jim say? So I really want to impress on you how much of an impact you've had with your institutional knowledge, and you really will be definitely missed here in AG. So if anyone else would like to say any words, I'd encourage that at this time.
Well, this is Marcia Guthrie, and I'd like to, you know, voice my appreciation and gratitude to Jim as well. His knowledge of the history of Lopez and the years we've had a lot of rain, the years that we didn't, that history is so very important. And he brought so much to the table. Jim, you're really going to be missed here. But have fun and good luck on your next adventure.
This is Karen Bright. Jim, first of all, I'm mad at you. So let's just get that straight first. We are going to miss you terribly. You were the first person to ever say seawater intrusion to me. I didn't even know what it even was. Whenever there was ever a question about anything that had to do with water, you were the first person I ever even thought of. And Grover Beach just won't be the same without you. So I hope that you think about us all the time. Whenever you see water, I want you to think of Grover Beach, because we certainly will think of you. I can't tell you how much we appreciate all that you've done for us. So I do wish you well, but you have a heck of a nerve. So anywho, enjoy your retirement, and thank you again, truly, for all you've done.
Jim, this is Brad Hageman, and I guess this on behalf of, I wasn't at the TAC meeting this last session, but representing, I guess, the kind of the engineering community in San Luis Obispo County, and it's particularly every old piece of paper I turn over at Avila Beach CSD, and now more recently at San Miguelito Mutual, Gehring's name is on it in some fashion. So he's going to be around for a long time in files and in our history, and just a great gentleman, Jim, and appreciate your professionalism and your friendship over these years. Best of luck in Arizona.
Hey Jim, it's Brian Talley, and did you get the Talley Firm's hat that I sent your way?
Oh yes, I did. Thank you.
Oh good. Well, that's a token of appreciation from the farmers of the Arroyo Grande Valley. We appreciate your knowledge, your expertise, and your leadership with respect to this wonderful collaboration that we've been able to establish with the County of San Luis Obispo and our local communities, that I think really makes water work in the Arroyo Grande Valley. So thank you for your leadership in that respect.
This is Shirley Gibson with Oceano CSD, and I just wanted to say that we also relied on Jim's expansive knowledge, and my father always had always highly respected you, Jim. So thank you for helping our community.
Thank you, everybody. I think his shoes will be impossible to fill. And I just want to ask Jill, is Jim, does he represent, what's the title? Is it the member at large?
Yes.
Okay. That's okay. And then how long has he, so he's been on zone three for 39 years?
He's been part of zone three, either in some fashion, either representing an agency in some way or another. Jim can probably tell us.
Oh, yeah, I suppose I could. So to go back in history, I was licensed as a civil engineer in 1976. And Marshall Ellis was president of the board of directors of the Avalon Beach County Water District. And he found out that I was licensed, and he decided that I should be the district engineer instead of my dad. And so that was as of 1977. So later, Marshall had always been the representative to Zone 3 from CSA 12, even though mysteriously Avila Beach County Water District was not part of CSA 12. In any case, he was the delegate, and he got tired of going to meetings. And I said to him one day, I says, you know, Marshall, if you'd like, I could go, and if somebody would decide that I could be appointed as your alternate delegate. And that happened in, as far as I can recall, in 1980 or 1981 at the latest. So we're talking about 39, probably not quite 40 years. And that's where it all started as far as me being on Zone 3. Later, when the delegate at large opened up, I applied for that position because there was a change in district engineers at what was then the Avila Beach Community Services District. So that was the time at which I was appointed the delegate at large. And that would have been perhaps around 1996, I think.
Wow.
And then the other thing is, so I've spent 18 years as district engineer for the Avila Beach County Water District, 27 years as city engineer for Grover City, Grover Beach, and then another 13 years so far as the assistant to Greg Ray, who's the city engineer, director of public works. And in the interim, done a couple of stints as interim city engineer for the city of Arroyo Grande. So I've had a great run and certainly enjoyed a lot of wonderful people, and hopefully all these great things you said about me are true, and I've actually helped some people. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. I'm pretty sure they're all true. So, all right. And then, Jill, could you just maybe, because I can't see you guys, can you just send me a photo of the water droplet, the engraved water droplet? I'd just love to see it just tomorrow or something. Email it out to us. That would be great.
I will do that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. So that takes us to our next item, which is officer rotations. And I will hand it over to Jill.
Yes, just as a reminder, per the bylaws for the Zone 3 committee, members of the committee at the first meeting of each fiscal year rotate the position of chairman and vice chairman, and each serve for a 12-month term. So as this is considered the first meeting of the new fiscal year, so Kristen Barnage, the representative of Arroyo Grande, will now be stepping down from committee chair, and Karen Bright will now become the committee chair, and Marcia Guthrie will now be representing, Marcia Guthrie will now be the vice chair representing Pismo Beach. And with that, now Karen will chair the rest of the meeting.
Thank you. Okay, am I unmuted? I can't tell anymore.
We hear you.
Okay. Thank you. So then I guess we'll, well, thank you, Christian. You were marvelous.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
I'd be happy to just let you continue on, but I guess you'll be stuck with me now for the next short while. So then we'll just move on then to item 5, approval of the meeting minutes for May 21st. And do we need to take these separately, Jill?
It's up to you. I don't think so. You can make a motion to approve them both if you like.
Okay. So all right. So then so we'll go with approval of the meeting minutes for May 21st, 2020, and the special meeting of May 28th, the budget endorsement. Does anyone have any additions or corrections to either one of those minutes? Hearing none.
This is Councilmember Barnett, and I would move for approval of those minutes of May 21st and May 28th.
Thank you. May
this
I have
is
a second?
Brian Talley, and this is Brian Talley. I'll second that.
Thank you. May I have a roll call?
Yes. Member Gibson?
Yes.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Barnett?
Yes.
Member Hageman?
Yes.
Member Gehring?
Yes.
Member Guthrie?
Yes.
And Member Talley?
Yes.
Thank you. Very good. So we can now move on to item 6, the operations report, please.
Yes. Jenny, are you available to give the operations for today, operations report for today?
I'm sorry, I do not have those. I apologize. I was not aware I needed to have them prepared for tonight.
Yeah, that was probably my fault. Sorry, I thought maybe you would have them. But well, how about if we skip then what's happening today, and we will go right into attachment 2, which is the projected reservoir levels.
All righty.
And
thank
that
you.
Is in your packet. And if you have that available, we are currently tracking as would be expected because this chart is based on predicted rainfall. If you have the chart, you can see at the bottom, there's the red is what we act is the precipitation we actually received, and the blue is what was what they thought we would get. So you can see that back in May, we actually exceeded what was expected, but then we were a little bit less in the month of, in the month of May, we were less than was predicted, and we were more in the month of April, and June was a little bit less as well. So overall, the amounts were small, but you can generally see that if we don't receive any rainfall between now and say December, we're going to be somewhere around, looks like 21,000 acre feet in the reservoir. If we get the predicted rainfall that's shown there in the blue in the next coming months, we would be somewhere up around, looks like maybe 23,000 acre feet. So, any questions on the reservoir storage projection?
No.
Okay. Then we can move on to item 6C, which is the May and June monthly operations report. I'm looking at the first one. You should have two of them in your packet, one for the month of May and one for the month of June. And what I wanted to point out is that in May, you'll see that the surplus water declared, that's the third column from the left has the amounts, actual amounts of surplus water declared. It actually went to the Board of Supervisors in June. The fourth column over, which says surplus water requested, still says zero because I'm still compiling all the various agencies' requests for surplus water. So that will be shown on the July monthly operations report. But I can say that four of the five agencies have requested surplus water in some amount. And I apologize for those graphs on the May 20th. We're still working on that one. For some reason, the graph there is very tiny, but it fixed itself in June. So if you look at the June report, you can see that you can see a little bit better what's happening. We are currently at the end of June. We have about 1,500 acre feet of stored state water. And as I've mentioned before, that number probably won't go down until some of the agencies that take state water really start taking significant quantities of state water. And we are at downstream releases are at 2.3 million gallons per day right now. It's lower than what was requested by the ag folks, but that was because we have a project going down in the AG Creek managed flood control channel, and they are doing sediment removal and vegetation removal, so they are needing the water levels to be like at their minimum down there. So we've lowered the releases from what we might normally be releasing at this time of the year. Other than that, things are looking normal. Does anybody have any questions maybe on either the May or the June operations report?
Jill, this is Councilmember Barnes. I just have a question regarding the work in the creek in Arroyo Grande. Do you know how long about they anticipated that might be slowed down, if you will, the releases because of that project?
Yes, it's looking like it'll probably be through the end of July. We did run into a few interesting extra community members in the creek. We found four beaver dams, which kind of threw a little bit of a wrench into the work. So we're navigating around that extra something we didn't anticipate. But yes, they still expect to complete the project and that they can increase downstream releases probably beginning in August.
I'm sorry, okay, Jill, this is Karen. What did you say you found?
Yeah.
Beavers.
Okay. I didn't know what you found. I was trying to figure that out. Okay. Can I ask a question? So then what happens to the beavers?
Oh, they're there. They're still there.
Okay.
You still have to work around them, right? It just makes things a little more challenging.
Thank you.
So, Jill, this is Jim. Thinking about the lower Cienega Valley farmers and their wells and these reduced releases, I'm wondering if some thought should be given to maybe doing some monitoring on a crucial ag well down there to see if we could increase releases after the project's done to maybe make up for a cumulative deficit in downstream release and perhaps make them or provide more water for them. There is a well down around just south of Halcyon before it goes up to up onto the Mesa. Mm-hmm. And there is a depression in summertime around that well that perhaps could be alleviated by increasing downstream releases after we get done with this project that seems to be interfering with them. Just something to think about. Thank you.
Is that a monitoring well or a private well that you're speaking?
That's the well that we're monitoring as part of the Northern Cities management area.
Okay.
If you talk to Dan Heimel, he'll know all about it.
Okay. Okay. We will check in on that, though. Yes. Any other questions on the monthly operations reports?
Okay. No other questions?
No.
Okay. Then I guess we'll move along then to item 7 and the information items, the terminal reservoir decommissioning.
Right.
Okay. Here's the big one.
So let's see here. Can you all see, hopefully you should all see this picture of, well, if you have the packet, we're on slide number 1. Those of you who are joining via GoToMeeting, you should see the slide up here that has a aerial picture of Lopez Reservoir with the title of Lopez Terminal Dam. So tonight, I'm going to present information regarding the Lopez Terminal Dam and compliance with the Division of Safety of Dams seismic standards. And specifically, I will discuss two alternatives, remediation and decommissioning. This is an informational item only tonight, and no formal action is necessary. The information provided tonight is intended to give you enough information to understand the issue, but it is by no means comprehensive. Most of the information you see tonight was researched by utility staff engineer Desiree Bravo, who has joined the GoToMeeting and is available to answer, you know, any detailed questions you might have about the information presented. So let's start with some background. Moving on to slide number 2, titled background/need. The Lopez Terminal Reservoir and Dam was constructed in 1969 as part of the Lopez Project to comply with State Health and Safety Code 115825, which requires 30 days of no contact time for drinking water reservoirs that allow for body contact. The terminal reservoir is approximately 40 acres, 20 feet deep, and holds about 900 acre feet. The terminal dam itself is about 53 feet high and 500 feet long. From documents we found as early as 1992, and maybe Jim can help us on this actually, the terminal dam was classified as a moderate hazard dam. The basis of that classification is not clear. However, we do know that the Division of Safety of Dams, also known as DSOD, seismic standards have been evolving over time in response to dam failures during actual earthquakes, such as the 1971 San Fernando earthquake that resulted in a dam failure and evacuation of 80,000 people. This incident alone prompted development of a DSOD seismic evaluation program. Now let's jettison forward to 2017. In 2017, the Orville Dam disaster occurred, and DSOD began to examine all the dams in California and determined dams would be assessed solely based on the downstream risk, not on the dam's actual physical condition. As a result, Lopez Dam and the Terminal Dam were reclassified as extremely high hazard dams due to the large community downstream. Now, prior to Oroville, the TAC requested a geotechnical assessment of the terminal dam be conducted, and we budgeted for this in fiscal year 16-17. It took some time to find a consultant and staff time, but in 2018, we hired a consultant, Rizzo, and they conducted a preliminary geotechnical assessment of the terminal dam. The assessment indicated the need to seismically retrofit the dam to meet the current seismic standards for dams classified as extremely high hazard. The RISO study recommended additional geotechnical field investigations of the terminal dam be conducted to confirm the preliminary results, because only geotech data from the main Lopez Dam was available. So what that means is there wasn't any actual corings that we had that we could find related to the terminal dam. So the consultant basically used information from the main dam and made the assumption that it would be similar conditions at this site. So in order to do these additional geotech investigations, we had to go on the route to get a permit from DSOD. During this process, DSOD requested a more robust amount of testing, which resulted in a much higher cost to do this next phase of the geotech investigation. And additionally, they recommended interim safety measures be implemented, such as lowering the water level of the terminal reservoir. So in essence, the estimated cost for this new geotech investigation went from about $90,000 up to $300,000. And on top of that, the interim safety measure of lowering the water level in the terminal reservoir is problematic to the operations of the water treatment plant, because the water treatment plant operates under gravity. And without a certain amount of water head pressure, it makes it more difficult to operate the plant. So the TAC was informed of the consultant's study results and recommended actions. And due to the significant cost increase and the likelihood that further investigation would confirm that the terminal dam does not meet current seismic standards, remember, this is because it has now been classified as an extremely high hazard dam, TAC recommended that staff evaluate the feasibility no longer using the terminal reservoir and decommissioning the terminal dam such that it is no longer a seismic hazard, as well as estimating costs associated with a seismic remediation project. The following slides outline the process, pros, cons, and costs of both alternatives. So the first alternative we're going to discuss, and I'll show you some information on, is the seismic remediation process. What you're looking at here is a picture. If you have, we're on slide one, I believe we're on slide four, if you're following along. The picture is of, that's the actual picture of the main dam seismic remediation construction underway. The main dam, this work was done back in 2002 at a cost of about $28 million. A geotech assessment will be needed to provide confirmation of the need to seismically remediate the terminal dam and determine soil characteristics that will help to develop remediation design alternatives. We'll also need to do some project planning, and that's going to include preliminary engineering and design, determining how to fund the project, assess any environmental constraints. And then there will be the actual design and construction, development of design and construction documents, and then ultimately the construction of the project. If we assume that a similar repair is needed to the main dam as is at the terminal dam, then the rough cost estimate is $10.5 million. However, further geotechnical investigations at the terminal dam would play a significant part in determining actual costs and project alternatives. On the next slide, we have the pros and cons of the seismic remediation of choosing the alternative of remediating the dam, the seismic issue. The pros are that if we do this alternative, it allows for us to continue to use the reservoir. The reservoir itself provides up to 7 days of emergency water. And it also, if we were to remediate the dam, it allows us to continue to operate status quo. It's something that's known. We know how the plant operates well with the terminal reservoir. So there would, other than the project, this would allow us to continue to use it as we have today. The cons are, though, there actually is quite a bit of maintenance costs associated with the terminal reservoir, such as tule removal, seismic monitoring, DSOD requirements, and water quality issues. And of course, the high cost of the dam remediation project. Here's how we came up with our sort of high level estimate for on the costs for the project. We know that this first step, the geotechnical field work, is going to cost approximately $300,000. And then the project itself, and this, again, it's based on, it's partly based on the cost that to do the 2002 Lopez Dam seismic remediation project. But Desiree also sort of fact-checked that estimate using the 2016 report, The Cost of Rehabilitating Our Nation's Dams by the Association of State Dam Safety Officials, and using their tool to estimate costs, came up with a cost of $7.2 million in 2003, and then when you inflate it for 2020, it results in approximately a $10.2 million project, which was right in line with our estimate based on our experience at the Lopez Dam. The time frame there shown of 2 to 5 years is just for construction and does not take into account project planning and design time frames. At this point, I'm going to move on to the legislation and decommission alternative. Is there any questions, though, first before I move on the seismic project?
So do you want to do questions on just one, or do you want to do questions on both?
We can do it. We can do it at the end or during, however you would like. I felt like I was moving quickly through the information, so I thought I would give you an opportunity if somebody had a question they wanted to ask now. But if none, I will continue to move on.
Okay, because I have questions, but I have questions on both. So I think I'll just wait till the end.
Why don't we get to the end then, and we'll take everyone's questions at that time.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So if you've moved on to the next slide, you should be looking at a picture of the face of the terminal dam. You'll see in the forefront of the picture are our sludge beds. That's where it looks like there's water in something at the left side. Those are the sludge beds. And you can see that we have a storage building there, and then you can see the top of the terminal dam. The alternative to seismic remediation project is to pursue legislation to exempt Lopez Reservoir from complying with the Health and Safety Code regarding body contact reservoirs used for public water supply. It's important to understand why this is actually a feasible alternative. In 2007, the Lopez Water Treatment Plant was upgraded with state-of-the-art membrane filters. During the feasibility and design of the upgrade by Black & Veatch, the upgrade design took into consideration the desire that the plant would be able to meet water quality standards without the use of the terminal reservoir. Staff believes the plant now meets the State Division of Drinking Water's required water quality credits and qualifies for an exemption to Health and Safety Code Section 115825. This option would be a two-step process. It would not only require legislation to be exempt from the Health and Safety Code section, but would also require decommissioning of the terminal dam such that it is no longer a seismic hazard. This could involve removal of a portion of or all of the terminal dam to reduce the amount of water stored in the reservoir. So let's take a look at the legislation process. Here are some of the steps necessary to pursue legislation to become exempt. One, we need to conduct a feasibility study. As I mentioned, amend the Health and Safety Code, and it would allow us to take direct intake from Lopez Lake Reservoir. We would need to conduct a Lopez Water Treatment Plant assessment, and that would tell us whether or not we have the number of water quality credits. We would need to conduct a Lopez Lake water quality intake assessment, and that is basically to look at the actual physical intake structure at the main dam. We would have to update a watershed sanitary survey and determine a new setback and relocate the log boom. A log boom is a protective device that keeps people and boats away from the intake structure at Lopez Lake. We currently don't meet the minimum standards, but we are allowed to operate because we have the terminal reservoir. Without the terminal reservoir, it is our current understanding that the log boom would need to be set at a minimum of 500 feet from the lowest intake. Currently, we estimate the log boom to be located about 100 feet. One moment, please. All right. And I'm sure, as I mentioned before, there are probably more steps, but this is the kind of the high level that we're giving you tonight. And if we were to undertake the feasibility study, a lot of the details on this would come out. The second part, the decommissioning the terminal dam process. So we would need to conduct an environmental assessment of the 40-acre terminal reservoir to determine quality and quantity of habitat and presence of any threatened or endangered species and any impacts to draining it to some degree to remove the seismic hazard. At a minimum, I believe what we would need to do is remove at least the spillway to reconnect the drainage. So there's an actual drainage way that comes into the terminal reservoir, and we would want to reconnect it with Arroyo Grande Creek. On top of that, we would need to obtain permits from all the resource agencies with jurisdiction over the area. Dam removal, as I mentioned, probably at a minimum removing the spillway, but it's also possible DSOD could make us do more. And again, mitigation and restoration efforts for the whole area. The estimated cost for both the legislation and decommissioning is $5.4 million. And if you turn this, go to the next slide, we have the pros and cons for this, the legislation / decommission alternative. The pros on this one are that whole 40 acres could potentially be used as a mitigation bank for local projects. That would actually be a huge benefit for anybody who might be doing a project and does not have the area on site to do the mitigation that they're required to. We would have long-term maintenance savings, potentially no longer having to do all the things we do currently for the terminal reservoir. There's also potential grant funding, and we would be improving public safety by getting rid of that seismic hazard. The cons are that this alternative could be potentially a very long and lengthy process. The legislative process alone could take about a year. However, there can be all kinds of delays that can extend the process to two or more years, depending on what modifications to the bill are recommended by the other departments, state departments. The legislative process requires the support from a local congressman. At this point, the biggest con we have is that we really have no idea what the costs might be involved in environmental impacts, mitigation, timing. That's all a bit of a question mark as of today. Again, we would talked about it. We would have to have a new recreation setback at the lake. That's the log boom. Likely to have additional water quality testing. We would have a different kind of additional maintenance, that of the bypass pipeline. So there exists already a pipeline that takes, that's never been used, but it was installed at the time of the project specifically so that in, if there was ever a need to take water directly from the lake and give it to the communities, for some reason, if the water treatment plant had a problem or there was a problem at the terminal reservoir. So a pipeline already exists, but we would now have to do additional maintenance on it. And then, of course, is just the loss of that, the storage of water that the terminal reservoir currently provides. On your next slide, you should see an estimate. Here's, this gives you how we did our real rough $5.4 million estimate. You can see that the costs have been identified for the legislative process. The big ticket item here is the possibility that another treatment process might have to be added to the plant if the Lopez Water Treatment Assessment indicates the need. Typically, what we'd be looking at is bringing in ozone. And as the TAC has looked at this option several times in the past, and we've estimated that to cost about $625,000 to bring a whole new process onto the plant. Another big ticket item, as you can see, is the actual dam removal. The cost shown here is for complete dam removal. And as I mentioned before, this would seem somewhat unlikely, but is shown here so that the estimate shown represents basically a worst case scenario. The other item, which is surrounded by unknowns, and I mentioned that as well, is the environmental mitigation restoration efforts for the 40-acre terminal reservoir. A terminal decommissioning feasibility study will help refine the actual items and costs associated with this alternative. All right, so TAC's recommendation, they were given the same, more or less the same presentation at their July 8th meeting. And first, let me say, that picture there that you're looking at is not anything that is happening in Zone 3 or ever has. This is actually a picture of dam removal in Pennsylvania. But just want to assure you that this is not going on. And apparently, this would be in a serious environmental no-no. But at the July 8th, 2020 TAC meeting, the TAC was presented with these two alternatives and recommended moving forward with a feasibility study to decommission the dam. As you recall, perhaps back in March, or we did not meet in March, through the budget, I think it was actually presented in January, about $50,000 from Zone 3 District Designated Reserves was earmarked for this study by the advisory committee during the 2021 budget process. The actual cost of the study could be much higher, and we would need to transfer funding from the District Designated Reserves into the Zone 3 Operating Fund. And in the case that it were to cost more than $50,000, we would have to consider, we would have to determine how that additional would be funded. At that point, I have no more to add. And if you'd like to answer any questions anybody might have, and Desiree, as I mentioned, is on the line if you have any real detailed questions.
This is Marcia. I have a quick question. I do agree with TAC. I think that's the wisest avenue to pursue. When this was determined to be a potential seismic hazard, was there any kind of time frame that we need to work with? And you know, I'm just trying to get if there will be any penalties, because it sounds like this is legislatively, it's going to take the time to move it forward. So, is there any kind of penalties or anything for not acting within a certain amount of time?
That's a really good question, and I did not touch on it here in the presentation, but it is noted in the staff report that in your packets. But yes. So when we went to the Division of Safety of Dams and requested a permit to do the geotechnical, that basically alerted them that there's a potential issue with the terminal dam. They did, we asked for an extension. They've given us a 1-year extension, and by next June, we would need to give them a detailed plan of how we wanted to proceed. So they understand that we are looking at alternatives and trying to determine what is the best route to go. No matter what, moving forward, I think we're going to have to figure out how to reduce the risk. So if we were to not do this, for example, if it took us several years to go down this process of legal, with the legislative process and the decommissioning, we're going to have to do some kind of interim measure to satisfy them that we're taking care of the hazard while we go along this process to do the work, to whether we decide we go seismic remediation or if we if we stop using the terminal reservoir.
You'll have to do something to maybe appease them until we get to, until we get further along. I mean, you said you're going to have to do some kind of work. Explain that a little bit? And is that budgeted?
We have a year, and we don't have to do anything for the next year. And maybe Desiree, she's the one that's been in contact with them, but they want us to have a plan. I know that. We have to respond to them here shortly with what is our plan over the next year. And then come next June, we will have to have another plan to give them. And I don't, that some of that will have to be, we don't know what that plan is yet, because we really need to do the feasibility study to determine which route we decide to go. And we may have to do some geotechnical work now in order to understand what is the real solution in terms of seismic remediation. We gave you, again, that estimate of $10.5 million is a worst case scenario, because those stone columns and the way that we remediated the Lopez Dam was based on particular constraints associated with that particular site. We may not have those same constraints at the terminal reservoir. So the cost to remediate the terminal could be less. We don't know until we do at least some technical investigation. So we're going to have to work on parallel paths for a little while.
I got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
This is Shirley Gibson.
This is Jim. Just an additional comment on that. Thinking back to when we had done the studies in the late 1990s on the main dam and concluded that it was seismically at risk, the Division of Safety of Dams said, well, you got to lower the reservoir down to elevation 460. Just for reference, it's probably around 490 something today. So, and we said, well, that's all well and good, but our outlet valves aren't big enough to do that in the face of a wet year. And they simply understood that there are some things we can't operate and do from a physical standpoint. And I suspect that same scenario might play here with regard to being able to operate the water treatment plant.
Well, that's good to know. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
This is Shirley Gibson with Oceano. I had a question about the dam removal, and it's $3 million, which is a big chunk of the money. And in the presentation, you said we would have to remove the spillway and possibly the dam. And then on your little chart, it says $3 million as worst case scenario. So why the wide range of maybe we do it or we have to spend $3
million? It's unknown. We just don't know enough yet, Shirley. I believe that we gave you the worst case scenario. That would be department, DSOD saying you need to remove the entire dam, spillway included. And, kind of the best case scenario is us being requested to reconnect that drainage, which would only really require removal of the spillway.
Okay. So during one of these studies, then at that point, they're going to come up with a solution or cost?
Yes. Yeah, that's if we undertake some more geotech studies in that area, we will be able to identify some of the key parameters that might determine which type of remediation do we do, right? So the seismic remediation, it could end up being those stone columns. It could be basically widening, making the dam bigger, or it could be some other type of solution. So it really depends on what we find when we do some of this geotech investigation. And some we believe we can do downstream of the dam and not have to engage with a permit from DSOD. We might be able to get some of that information right away without going through a lengthy permit process with them.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey Jill, this is Brad. On the bottom of I think it was maybe your sixth slide or so, environmental mitigation restoration efforts.
Yeah.
That was maybe I didn't get that quite right. Did that imply that the county might be able to use or make that available to other projects to offset?
Yeah. Impact? Yeah, exactly. It's hard to know whether that item is going to be a cost to us or a benefit at this point.
Yeah.
It could go either way. Initially, from talking with our environmental division, they think it would be a great area for as a mitigation bank, and that other agencies would pay into that area to be able to mitigate their project, and then they would pay the maintenance costs associated with that particular, whatever amount of acres they needed to provide. So definitely it would be a way to offset that cost.
But
what that might look like, yeah.
We're not talking about millions of dollars there, maybe hundreds of thousands or so.
I really don't know. I don't know how much 40 acres of potential mitigation area is worth.
Yeah. Okay.
Hard to know.
And just to follow up, I guess, Division of Dam Safety, if there's no water behind and an earthen dam, do they care?
I, again, I feel like the answer is an easy no, but you know, I don't want to say anything until we, again, this would be the feasibility study, would hopefully get some of these details. It's just, you know, we did as much research as we could without, you know, getting in touch with, we got in touch with several agencies, the Division of Drinking Water was helpful to us. We reached out to some other agencies who maybe have done something similar like this, but we are rather unique in that really a lot of people have done the legislative process, but they didn't actually have a terminal reservoir already.
Yeah.
They just were needed, for example, City of Paso Robles. They wanted to take Nacimiento water, which is raw water, and there's body contact there. But they petitioned and were able to get the legislation, and they were not, they did not have to build a terminal reservoir. They just showed that the new water treatment plant that they had built met all the criteria. So gotcha. It's just hard to find somebody in our unique position that is doing what we're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Hey, this is Brian Talley, and not a question, but a comment. I did get to attend the TAC meeting, and you know, there was feedback that we were all very appreciative of the really deep dive that county staff did into this. And you know, I recognize that there's more work that needs to be done, but I think it gives us a pretty good sense at a high level of you know, of the issue.
Thank you.
So Karen Bright here. I just hello?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm wondering about the recreation setback. Do you know how much beach or recreation area might be lost?
So let's see, let me, if you have your presentation, let's see, no, I don't have a picture of the Lopez Lake here. The intake structure for Lopez Lake is located on, if you were driving out to Lopez Lake, it would be on the far side of the dam. And that's where the intake structure is. And that is the area where the log boom would be, right around the intake area. Usually, I've seen it before at Nacimiento, and it's usually in kind of a half circle type of arrangement. So like a 500 foot radius around that is, I don't know the details, but that's how I'm imagining it. And if you've gone over there, there isn't really any beach or anything there. Now, 500 feet out, I see the impact possibly being to water skiing, right? That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there isn't really any beach around there.
Okay. So it's not going to be, so it wouldn't be like actual, why did I think it was going to be, maybe it's something I read. New recreation setback is what it says. So I took it to mean like a beach area. So it's not going to be actual loss of like a beach area then.
Not really, not in that particular location. I don't know. I haven't looked at a map to actually map out what 500 feet looks like. But it's possible, you know, if you've gone out there and you start at the marina and you just start heading out and you can go by the dam, you know, imagine that somewhere out there you're going to be impacted because you're not going to be able to go up that close to the dam or that okay. intake structure. Where okay. that is, I don't know.
Okay. So, okay. All right. I'm just imagining someone's going to ask me that. And so, all right. We just don't know yet, basically.
Yeah, and hopefully, yeah, and this, and again, I like that feasibility study will probably help us kind of okay. get some of these details and to figure out, are they things to worry about or little things to worry about?
Okay. Then my other question is about loss of the water storage. So, and in the staff report, it says the water treatment plant would be able to deliver about 8 hours of water, and at that point, state water would have to be utilized. So, my city, we don't use state water. So, then that wouldn't be something that we'd even concern ourselves with. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, yes. So, what the reference that you're reading has to do with if, for example, we did not use the terminal reservoir, and there was some sort of issue with the water treatment plant, and we had to shut the plant down. They do have it's called the Clear Well Reservoir there, and what that's saying is that it can hold about eight hours worth of water. And so if we were to continue to deliver water to everyone, it would have to be state water because state water is already treated. And so,
I see.
But in your case, if that, and it's really no different than what happens from time to time now, is that we would either do sort of an exchange in which you would be taking state water, but then we would rebalance it when the emergency was over, or you would just simply not take Lopez water and you would have to use your groundwater wells.
I see. Okay. All right. That makes sense to me. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Are there any other questions from any of the other board members? Okay.
Mute button off. So, Jill, when will we know more in regards to the cost of the feasibility study?
So, the way that we would go about that is we are going to put an RFP, also known as a request for proposals, out, and we would. There's a couple ways we could do it. We can determine what the scope of work is, and we put that out on the street for people to bid on, or we could do another route, which is where we actually ask for a request for qualifications. And that would basically tell us, if a consultant is qualified to do the work. And then once we choose the qualified consultant, then we work with them to determine the scope of work and the cost. So given that we really have about a year to get this together and to get the feasibility study done so that we can understand our options and choices, we'll probably need to move forward on that quickly. But once we do that, that's when we're going to know what the actual cost of this feasibility study is going to be.
Okay, thank you for that.
Any other questions?
Nope. Okay, doesn't sound like it. Okay, I think our brains are pretty much full.
Well, you gotta make room for a little bit more here.
This is true. All right then. So then this is just we're just receiving this information at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you're not asking for anything from us?
No.
Is that correct?
Okay. That's correct. I wanted to let you all know what was happening on it. Because more importantly, you've already earmarked money for the study through the budget.
Right?
So we recognize that we already have support from your group to move forward with this. I wanted to let you know that it's more of an urgency at this point things kind of sped up a little bit quicker than maybe anticipated when we did this back in January. So,
right. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for that in-depth report. Appreciate all that information and all the work that has been done up to this point. So thank you very kindly. So I guess now we'll just move on to 7B, the water supply contract changes.
Yes. So this is attachment 5 in your agenda packet. And what this is just to kind of help to give you an update of where we're at. We've been talking to you about this since January and kind of bringing everybody along on the steps we've been taking to change the contracts such that all the agencies are given storage rights behind Lopez. To that end, starting in February of this year, we formed Zone 3 TAC, formed a subcommittee to work through the process of modifying the contracts to include the desired changes. The subcommittee completed their review and has prepared very specific contract language edits for review by Zone 3 TAC and District Legal Counsel. At this point, we have given the documents to the district's county council for a first review, and they are looking at it right now. In addition, on parallel tracks, our environmental division is working on developing a project description for the CEQA document. And they're in the process of preparing the draft project description and a notice of preparation for the contract change initiative. So the next steps for us and for the ACE, for the advisory committee is that you will be asked to review the proposed contract edits and the draft project description at the September advisory committee meeting. The goal will be to obtain input from your group on the proposed changes and provide a recommendation to formally initiate the CEQA process, which will include district environmental staff publicly releasing the notice of preparation and project description to local, regional, and statewide stakeholders and regulatory agencies, and that we are going to be preparing the appropriate CEQA document. So that's where we're at today. And if you have any questions on that, I'm happy to answer them. Brad and Jim have both been gracious to give their time on this subcommittee. So it was extra meetings. So they can answer any questions as well. We feel fairly good about the work we accomplished. It was great. We did it very collaboratively between all the agencies, and we basically took the contract and we redlined it, and we added and deleted things that we felt were either unneeded. You know, some of those were like old things that are not related to the objective of getting stored state water, but other things that help clarify the contract. We will look forward to bringing you some sort of a summary or synopsis on that at the September meeting. Any questions?
Are there any questions? Anyone have anything they want to ask at this point?
Not for me.
Well, doesn't sound like we have any questions at this point in time. Okay. All right, then. We'll say no to that then. So I guess then we'll just move on to item 8, the capital projects update. So the bi-monthly update, please.
Yes. Attachment 6 in your packet. This is from our staff engineer, David Spiegel. There's only two that have had some sort of a change, basically since the last one you received in May. The first one is of some significance. If you look at the top under project updates, it says spillway assessment. The change there is that the Division of Safety of Dams responded to our work plan. We had submitted a work plan to and the work plan was created by our consultant, GEI, and we've received the comments back from Division of Safety of Dams, and we, at first glance, it looks pretty good. There's nothing, they seem to agree with our work plan for the most part. We are going to prepare comments and resubmit to them. And that they basically agreed with the condition assessment and the recommendations for our work plan. Once we finished that last, this bit of communication with them, our next steps will be to figure out how to do this, the items on the work plan. So some of those items involve videoing all the spillway under drains, maybe I think there's some other structural work we're going to do. I don't have the details on it, but I can have Dave Spiegel maybe come to the next meeting if you're interested in the details of it. The other item, and we've already talked about it today, is the structural assessment of the terminal reservoir dam. The DSOD has given the district a year to determine the feasibility of remediating the dam or decommissioning the terminal reservoir. And we're currently, you know, in the process you saw tonight where we did our best to put sort of a cost benefit assessment together at a high level. Other items coming up that potentially could be costly and slightly unknown is we did the cathodic protection survey. We got a report back from the consultant. And of course, there's a list of various repairs that need to be done to the cathodic protection system. And there's also an opportunity to maybe install some cathodic protection where there wasn't some already. So that's another sort of big ticket item that we will, that's probably the next highest priority for us. And those are the only changes at this point to the Zone 3 project update. Is there any questions from anybody on those items? I can say that at the September meeting, there will be probably additional items put on this, and it'll be the work that we budgeted for in 2021. So those items will now show up on this list as well.
Jill, would you mind just briefly describing what a cathodic protection is? I'm sorry.
No, good question. Where's Desiree? This is her project. Cathodic protection has to do with corrosion protection. And Desiree, are you there?
Yes, I'm present. Sorry.
Corrosion?
Nobody was asking me anything, so I started eating my dinner. Sorry.
So Desiree, the question is, what is cathodic protection? And I thought if you wanted to give a brief overview of what cathodic protection is on, it is something that's installed on the pipeline to help prevent corrosion.
But okay, thank you. That's good enough.
Okay. that's the overall major gist of it. Yes.
That's good enough.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead. Finish your dinner.
I'm so sorry, no.
Okay. Any other questions from any of the other board members? No? Okay. I'm going to say that's a no. So it looks like we have no action items, either items 9 or 10. And let's go to our next page here. Any future agenda items? Yes.
Let's see. Let me look real quick here. Yes, I do want to talk about one of the things that's on there. As I mentioned, we're going to come back to you in September with the contract changes, and we will definitely do that. In addition, I would anticipate that by September, we should have the final report on cloud seeding from our consultant. They're tentatively scheduled to give us a presentation at TAC in August, and I will bring any results or any information that we obtain from that to the advisory committee in September.
Excellent. We'll be looking forward to that. Okay. Any questions on that from our other members? No. All right then. Moving on now to item 12. Any committee member comments? Well, hearing none, then I guess we will adjourn this meeting. All right then.
All right.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you all.
Good night. Everybody.